Hello and welcome to Meandering with Myrn, a potpourri of podcasts by me, veterinary ethologist Myrna Milani. Join me as I ponder any and all things animal and human, what we know and what we don't, where we've been, where we are, and where we're headed. Because of my work, I've always been very interested in the way animals perceive their realities. The majority of animals that I work with have behavioral problems and often serious behavioral problems. And in order to figure out the best way to address them, I need to at least have some idea of where these animals are coming from. There are those both in and outside of the scientific community who would dismiss how animals view reality, saying, it's beyond my comprehension, so I'm not going to worry about it. I can understand why they would do that, because it most certainly simplifies life enormously. But just because we can't directly experience, for example, how a dog or a cat or a horse or even a worm or a fish experiences pain, does that give us the right to say that that pain doesn't exist? I say no. And if we can say that about pain, then why can't we say that about the way those same animals see or hear or smell? Just because we can't comprehend it doesn't mean it doesn't exist and that it doesn't have implications for the health and well-being of those animals. Coincidentally, during the past month, I was reading the writings of two authors who were discussing the canine sense of smell and what a critical role it played in the dog's sense of reality. This isn't new information at all. It's long been known. What is new is the desire of the average person to consider the implications of this. What does it mean to live in a reality that is dominated by the sense of smell? Again, there are those within and without the scientific community who would say, who cares? But I think it's cool. It never ceases to amaze me that my animals live in a reality that's in the realm of what we humans consider paranormal. I mean, how cool is that? It's like having your own three-dimensional kind of ghost around, right? They can hear things. They can smell things that we can't begin to comprehend. But that's not necessarily true. We can comprehend, at least analogically or metaphorically so, if we care enough to try. So, for example, let's go back to the sense of smell. One of the authors I was reading, for some strange reason, decided that dogs were incapable of a phenomenon known as olfactory fatigue. The way olfactory fatigue works is that if, for example, you stepped into an elevator and the large woman standing next to you was wearing one of those overpowering, cloying perfumes, if you had to stay there long enough, and if you weren't allergic to the scent, eventually you would come to ignore it. And if you had to be in there long enough, you might forget about it completely until somebody else got in the elevator and said, "Ugh, what is that stench in here?" Now, it seems to me, given how much more sensitive the canine sense of smell is than the human sense of smell, that a similar phenomenon would have to exist in dogs. Because think of it. Compared to us, a lot of the scents that we humans create and a lot of the scents that occur in our natural and man-made world are very, very strong. And given the dog's enhanced perception, it would be like the animal was constantly living in a world of that nauseating, overpowering perfume or the scent of a sewage treatment plant constantly. I find it very difficult to believe that other mammals don't experience olfactory fatigue the same way we do, as a protective mechanism. Or what about canine vision? Well, we know canine vision is different. They're not a visual species like we are. But one thing we do know about vision is that it's not a continuous phenomenon. When I look at something, even though I see a continuous image, what's actually happening is that information is coming into my optic nerve and going into my brain in short bursts of light, and between them, darkness. So it's like a twinkling. And do these short bursts of light go immediately to the logical centers of my brain where I objectively analyze them and critically recognize exactly what's going on? No. They go to the emotional centers of the brain. They go to memory before going on to those associated with objective analysis. So it's not a case for me or anyone else that seeing is believing, but rather believing is seeing. What we want to believe is what we see. Now, I've seen no data about this relative to other senses, and if anyone knows of any, please let me know. I'd love to see it. But it seems to me that this, more likely than not, isn't simply a visual phenomena. It seems to me that the same thing would happen to scent and sound. That although a scent or a sound might be emitted continuously by the source, that the data would come into the brain in packets and would be processed the same way. I find that really, really cool because it gives more and more weight to that most ancient of concepts, which is the self-created reality. Each one of my animals has their own reality, and they have a species reality, they have an individual reality, they have a mammalian reality, they have an animal kingdom reality. And then they have an animate reality that makes them part of all living things. And then they have a planetary reality that makes them part of what's going on here. And possibly, and I like to think for sure, they have a reality that transcends all of that. We humans have a way of being very superior in our attitudes for the animal kingdom. Heck, some of us can't even accept other humans who aren't the same color or the same sex or the same sexual orientation or the same religion. If they don't perceive reality exactly the same way we do, if they don't see what we see, smell what we smell, feel what we feel, we become threatened. We're the same way with animals up to a point, but then beyond that point, we just deny that those perceptions exist for them. Sometimes we are so visually oriented, we tend to think that that's all there is. I thought my work with animals sort of protected me from that, and yet when I was at Purdue a few weeks ago and went into their library, I realized what an incredibly visual individual I am. We walked into the library at the veterinary school at Purdue, and what immediately struck me was how empty it was. All that space. I had expected to see rows and rows of shelves bursting with textbooks from the very old to the very new. And instead, I saw space. High ceilings and lots of space. And in that space, small carols. In those carols, hookups to computers and students. And so in that visually empty space, those students had access to far, far, far more books and journals than that visually real library that I remember from Ohio State could ever begin to hold. If I believed what I had seen, I would have said that there was nothing there. But because I took the time to think about it, I realized that in that nothing, there was more than the something I remembered. And that's the mindset I try to apply with my own animals and most certainly with my patients. I know what I see, I know what I hear, I know what I smell, and I know what it means to me. And I accept that what it means to me has been processed by my emotions and by my memories, by my experience. But I also acknowledge that those animals have their own perceptions too, and that their sensory priorities are quite different than mine. They don't put as much weight on what they see, but they put more weight than I do on what they smell and what they hear. Believing is seeing. Believing is almost certainly hearing, smelling, response to touch. Regardless of the physiology of our sensory perceptions, the bottom line is that we're all different. And just because we can't perceive reality the same way they do, in no way means that their realities are any less real to them than our realities are to us.
You've been listening to a podcast by veterinary ethologist Myrna Milani. For more podcasts, commentaries and books about animal behavior and the human-animal bond, and links to behavior and bond sites, check out my website at www.mmilani.com. For more specific information, feel free to email me at mm@mmilani.com. All rights related to the content of these podcasts are retained by Myrna Milani. The background music, Molly on the Shore, by Percy Granger, is used with permission from Catova Arts, www.catova.com.